Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Around the Payload, a High Noon production. I am your host, The Blevins, and we have got a star-studded crew coming in for this episode. It's going to be a great one. Before I take the time to introduce them, let me quickly go over what Around the Payload is for you here who are new. This is a wacky, wonderful Overwatch League-themed show, game show, where the points definitely matter a lot, and this is very, very high stakes. Each of these guests have put up tens of thousands of their own dollars that I am just I'm just telling them now. They didn't know this, but their bank accounts have been drained, and it is all up for grabs here. No, not really. We're just going to be talking about Overwatch, competitive Overwatch, and Overwatch League, everything around it. So sit back and relax, and I'm going to be doling out the points. You're going to be hearing a sound that sounds kind of like this. That is the hosts getting points for you in podcast land. Don't worry, you're not missing out on your Overwatch game. You can go back to maining Junkrat and spamming it in the new season. But without further ado, let me introduce our wonderful guest. To my upper, in my upper left, we've got Melarina, co-host of Cavalry and I'll Recap. Welcome back.
Whoop whoop. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. In the upper right, we have the first newcomer this week. We've got Red Air 4, TGH Esports Contenders, and oh yeah, the Seagull hack guy, the Seagull mask guy, Thibbledork. There it is. We got it. Welcome.
Just over there in the corner. Happy to be aboard.
Thank you for being here. In the bottom right, we have Shoutcaster for OW Path to Pro China, Rian Shouts. Rian, welcome.
Heck yeah. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here. We've got the seagull mask and the goat in the background. Love it. Love it. And last and certainly not least, we have the one and only co-host of High Noon Podcast, Foul Play, and co-creator of High Noon Productions, Deathblow. Welcome back, buddy.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. I'm really upset that these new players already understand how to get meme points out of their hosts and have their seagull masks and goats in their backgrounds. I mean, it's upsetting, but competition's good.
You're not wrong. They both have already started off with a point of creativity. I don't see any sort of masks or animals in the background of either of your...
Just crowns. Teams. Just crowns. Champions don't need gimmicks.
True. But clearly, if you think you don't need gimmicks, you've never been on this show. But... let's jump right in to round number one. Oh, I should definitely get these sounds ready beforehand. Come on, sounds.
That wouldn't be anything like the show, though.
This is a high production value.
It's
sort of deal.
Super, super high production value. We have sounds. We have
tens of thousands of dollars. I don't know about having that.
We have sounds. It's just a toss-up whether or not they actually play. But speaking of a bunch of new money injected into an ecosystem, we are done with stage number one of season C. I can pick it right back up.
Thanks for that.
Unfortunately, I can't give myself points. But we are done with stage number one of season two. Bunch of new teams. We've seen a lot of stuff happen and not happen. But Thibble, we'll start with you. Has season two, stage one, lived up to your expectations?
In many ways, yes, and in many ways, no. I expected NYXL to recover after a weird Minecraft shenanigans slump in the playoffs. I expected Vancouver to do very well because they have all the runaway magic juice they could ever ask for, ever. Flowerven is just dusting them like Tinkerbell on a nice day. I expected Dallas to do just a wee bit better, and they didn't. They were better than any Dallas fan could ever hope for after seeing what happened through most of last season, but managing to disappoint me even so. Florida sucks still. That I expected. That's not unexpected at all. A lot of good stuff in the middle of the pack for me, I would say. I didn't expect it to be this close. I expected there to be some really bottom five teams, not just Florida and Washington, and then like five or six teams in the middle, and then that upper echelon. So in some ways, yes, in some ways, no.
Mm-hmm. Man, the Valiant don't even get credit for being a bottom pack team.
It's a brutal season for them. They're so bad. bad I forgot them. Wow. That's how bad that is. They got Thanos snapped, dude. They don't deserve to be mentioned.
Yeah, no one's so bad. No one's crying for LA Valiant when they get their first win this season. But Rianne, we'll move on to you. How were your expectations met or not met for this first stage of season two?
You know, I'm pretty much like Thibble in that a lot of the ways, yeah. You know, it's definitely lived up to a lot of my expectations. You know, I was expecting Vancouver to pop off, and hey, would you look at that? They went undefeated, so they definitely went insane. But then also, there were so many strange upsets we saw, and I mean, part of that is this guy's responsible. But, like, you know, Spitfire, Valiant, right? You know, Thibble might have forgotten about them, but I did not. I did not forget about our good old boys, the Valiant. Custa apparently is too smart to play with the Valiant, right? All sorts of weird shenanigans going on there in a Spark. They had such a good, strong start. I was hoping they were going to do a lot better than they did, but they didn't end up doing so, which was, you know, a little sad for me. Love that team.
The cotton candy did not quite get there.
No, it's too sweet. Brain is too dummy thick. It's alerting the potion.
True. DB, what are your thoughts here? Stage one live up to your expectations?
Honestly, it exceeded my expectations as a whole. I mean, the guys kind of talked about some of the specific teams that defied expectations, but the league as a whole, the parity was not anything I really expected. I mean, you knew Goats was going to level the playing field a little bit and maybe help things out. I expected the expansion teams to slump a little bit at the start as they got used to things, and they exceeded expectations there. They all came in hot. You know, amped up, ready to go. Plenty of them hit a wall pretty fast, but you know, for the most part, all the expansion teams showed up really, really well, I thought, for the opening stage. And yeah, overall, just it was a lot of fun. The upsets make Overwatch League a lot of fun to talk about, to make content for. I love getting hate tweets that the Houston Outlaws could never in a million years beat the Hangzhou Spark when I predict it to happen. And then you know what I mean? That didn't happen last year, right? You didn't get upsets quite like that, at least apart from public perception. So yeah, I had a really good time with this stage. I really hope we can keep some of that parity as we move into a more DPS centric meta, though I doubt it. But yeah, it was a great time, and I wouldn't even be mad if Goat stuck around a little bit longer than, you know, this patch and disappeared. I've always been a big fan of watching that. It's a lot of micro plays, a lot of things for the very you know, advanced fan or the very plugged in fan to really deep dive into and look at and evaluate. And for a content creator, that's great.
Yeah, but Deathball, it's just the same thing over and over again. All the fights last 500 hours. I can't understand anything. I'm sorry, I'm just quoting Reddit here.
Resident Sleeper. Hammer down, Resident Sleeper. Nerf this, Resident Sleeper.
Exactly. I know, something about seeing literally every single hero played in the first week just was really boring to me. But Mel, last words here for Super stage boring. One.
Well, how could it not live up to your expectations when history was made so many times? Just so much history. As Shanghai rated high, right? No, but in all reality, I think it did exceed my expectations. Like Deathblow, I think the expansion teams started off much better than I thought they could have. I think that the Chengdu Hunters gave me a ton of DPS to watch and fun comps, so that was super, super cool. And I just love that every match seemed winnable, kind of like people have said, but it wasn't just this, yes, this person's definitely going to win. I mean, New York went 3-2 with Valiant, you know, like every match seemed winnable at some point. And I think that that is huge for the league. And it got a little bit, you know, further apart towards the end, but there was still hopes and faith in people.
Houston won on Route 66. Literally anything was possible. This
yeah, I mean, I don't think you could get much better than that.
True. I hear true. On the day Shanghai got their first win, they gave everyone on the production crew a second I Captured History t-shirt. I thought that was pretty neat. Thank you.
I've already ranted enough about this, so I'm not going to go into it. Let's move on here and talk about, we've talked about Shanghai finally getting victories, but there are some teams that maybe we've forgotten, but that did not live up to expectations. So Mel, we'll start with you. Who did or did not live up to your expectations here?
All right, so I'll start with the London Spitfire, just because they're the obvious answer, right? They made the stage one playoffs after winning season one. But last season, they went to stage one and two playoffs, and then they didn't go to stage three and four. So maybe this year, they're just deciding to take off a couple, you know, the first couple stages because they got a big paycheck. So, you know, maybe that's their mentality this year. We know they're not consistently good all year. So that's fine. The other one I would say would be Paris Eternal. I think not necessarily preseason expectations because there was not real hype on them preseason, but after week one and two, I was super hype on them, and I thought that they had really kind of brought it together and showed very good goats, and then they just, like, I don't know, fell into quicksand and never came back up because it just got worse and worse from there.
Yeah, definitely. Death, who, what teams did not live up to your expectations here going into stage one?
I left Valiant for you, Death.
I'm gonna stay in LA, but I'm going with the other team. I want to talk about the Los Angeles Gladiators. They came out to a brutally slow start this year, and this was a team that was, you know, supposed to be or talked about like a top four contender, somebody that might have been able to ascend to, you know, the NYXL or now Vancouver level. You know, they brought in some players. Obviously, they had Decay come in, not really able to play early on, so that contributed to some of their struggles, and the roster's changed up, but I guarantee you nobody in that organization thought they were going to start 3-4 outside of the stage playoffs. They were supposed to be much better than this. A couple too many substitutions. I think the support play has been not the best, at least for it's a very big goose, right? It's not a small goose on main support for them, and I think he's back on his hero. Lucio was supposed to be, you know, his home, he's not been bad, but I remember a better version of Big Goose. And I think combine that with, some of the lackluster performances with the substitutions early on, and I just didn't quite get what I bargained for there. Also, no Bishu. That's disappointing as well. But, they're the team that disappointed me that is still in a very good spot, at least overall. Like, they're not far out of the playoff race. They got plenty of time. But, they should have been at the top dictating things and kind of being a leader, and they're not. They're who I'm going with here.
Definitely a good one. Rian, what are your thoughts? Who did not live up to your expectations?
Well, I've already kind of mentioned the Spark, so, you know, I won't go too in-depth on that. But another team, I'm actually going to spin it the other way. I'd say Toronto Defiant. I'm going to be honest, I really underestimated them coming into the season. And I thought, they're going to be solid mid-tier, you know, kind of bottom of the pack team. And then they just came out. And, I mean, they're way up there in the standings. So they really have impressed me and, you know, proved me, hey, can't judge a book by its cover. And then since Spark was so short, Hunters definitely as well. Kind of the same thing with Defiant. You know, I remember seeing so many power rankings and everyone was putting them so far low. And then how that did a 180 as soon as they started playing the Yata Chad Amang on the hamster.
These are teams that didn't live down to your expectations.
Yeah, they defied all expectations. There you go.
Makes sense for sure. Thibble, last words here. What are your thoughts on the teams that I guess performed differently than you thought that they would have?
Yeah, if we're going to restructure the question, sure. Right? For a team that kind of seems towards the middle of the pack almost exactly, the Guangzhou Charge. There were very many conflicting reports at the beginning of the season about how well they would do. You know, is this a team? Look at this language barrier. This is going to suck. This is so bad. Are these guys even capable of gelling together and doing well as a squad? They were two very close tiebreaker maps away from being a 5-2 team instead of a 3-4 team. Right? Which I think is insane. They also beat the crap out of Dallas, which hurts a lot. And in general, they just play some damn good Overwatch. Much like Chengdu, they throw out some crazy comps and everything like that, but they were equally as capable of pulling out some solid 3-3. And in general, they have so many weapons that it's almost impossible to prepare for them. Although four teams did well enough because they're 3-4. In general, I was very pleased with how they did. And after having them in the lower teens, I guess, it was good to see them push towards a potential playoff spot, even though major unlucky in playing Vancouver twice, for good Lord's sake. Overall, I spoke with some of the Guangzhou Charge representatives at Media Day before the season started. And of course, everybody had been asking them about the language barrier, so I didn't want to. And they said, and because we know you're curious about the language barrier, and he turned over to three of the players there, and in perfect English, in sync, they said, "We are the Guangzhou Charge." I said, "I got it. Understood. Okay. Good luck." Like, that was pretty impressive. So the Charge definitely have surprised me this stage and will hopefully do better when they don't play the best team in the league twice next stage. Ding.
Definitely a good point. I really wanted to hear a bum, 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 bum at the end of that, but
maybe we'll get jingle.
We do need a Guangzhou Charge jingle. Maybe we'll get that in stage two. But let's move on here to the last question in round number one. We have confirmation that the new patch that just came out is going to be what we're seeing in stage number two for Overwatch League. So, Deathblow, what teams level up the most from this meta change?
We're seemingly or predictably moving into a meta where DPS is going to be relevant again and maybe the highlight. So I think you need to really look at the teams that some of their best players are DPS players right now. And obviously these also have to be teams that are not maybe playoff teams at the moment. So I'm going to stay outside of the stage playoffs, even though plenty of those teams are able to level up. And I'm going to say the Los Angeles Gladiators are one that has a chance to significantly improve with Decay. It'll really depend on which heroes are good, but we've heard a lot of talk about McCree, Widowmaker, Junkrat. These are three heroes that our boys, Mel, sorry, I got to take them from you. Linkser and Jake are pretty good at those particular heroes, so I think you might see an opportunity to see Houston in a meta where their DPS is able to carry their team and they're not relying on their tank line and their support line near as much as they were in this past stage. And also, I think the Hangzhou Spark are another one. There's some really strong DPS players on that roster, and none of them got the opportunity to shine. So I think there's a good chance, you know, Godsby, Crystal, and those guys are going to really allow them to maybe become more of a playoff competitor and really take the highlight off of their indecision and their tank position and things like that. And, you know, they seem to have decided now, but that really cost them this stage. And I think it'll just be easier to kind of ignore that for the time being or cover it up with, you know, some PogChamp highlight reel plays from Godsby and Crystal. So,
Yeah, definitely a lot of good teams there. Rian, who are you seeing leveling up after we maybe move out of a GOATS meta?
So I think actually that this is an interesting question because there's teams like NYXL, you know, and if the meta does change and goes back to DPS, I mean, these guys will become even scarier than they are right now, right? Even without their DPS players, they're still popping off. And we saw how dominant they were when they were able to play those DPS players, right? My boy Pine, get him in here, get the big boss in. Where's he going? You know, or he's just sitting in at his desk counting the fat stacks of cash. Or who knows, right? But so I really think the NYXL is going to really pop off. And, you know, maybe the Shock as well. I think the Shock, they have a lot of talented players on that roster that are just kind of in brig jail, so to speak. So I'm excited for both those teams.
Yeah, when you unlock the ability to actually field Striker, that's got to be a good thing for your team. Yeah. Thibble, what are your thoughts here on teams leveling up for Stage 2?
I'm going to get a bit greedy and scoop three of the bottom four teams, the three that I actually remember exist on any given day, Paris, Washington, and Florida, largely because there's nowhere to go but up for those teams. Paris might seem like a bit of a weird one, given that they were so hyped up about 3-3, but that obviously wasn't true because they sucked. So I'm very curious to see what they can do when you can actually put Soon on a hero he doesn't hate, when you can activate players like Danye, when you can, I don't know, throw Nico on the Genji, something crazy. Who knows what this meta is going to be? I'm very curious to see what they can do when they're not forced into a composition that they say they're really good at, but they're apparently not very good at. Washington, with a trade that we'll discuss later, should be very interesting. I'm not entirely sure that's the end of the moves for Washington. There could be more. And regardless, much like Soon, putting Corey on Widowmaker or Tracer instead of Zarya is going to be so good. Jonas is also a little more comfortable on Winston, where if you press shift, you don't instantly die, which is a thing he forgets when he plays Reinhardt. So that might be interesting for Washington. Very excited to see what they can do when their main tank stays alive for longer than 30 seconds at a time. And Florida are going to complete, they'll be completely new for stage two. So, like,
Zaya player,
who knows?
Please.
No, dude, Florida is not, you won't recognize Florida in 3 weeks' time. There will be no one left. It is going to be not necessarily depressing, unless I guess you're a Zaya player fan. But Florida in general, I could see maybe actually doing better than 1-6, which is a low bar. But in general, restructuring, trying again, seeing if they can get something going with a team that can actually do something, because once again, Florida is doing Florida things. So those three, I think, could definitely level up in a stage that focuses on DPS and having new players play what they want to play.
For sure. But one thing I'll note is that as an NYXL fan, Janice has just a fine time feeding on Winston. Does not matter if it's Reinhardt or Winston. He finds a way to press shift into the other team. Don't worry.
Who was it that said, you know, the feeding drive? Who was that on Sideshow stream?
No, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I interviewed Jonas recently, and I asked him what's the difference between his performance on NYXL and his performance here. And he's like, I had the rest of NYXL with me. They could kind of cover up all my mistakes, and now I don't. So he's one step closer to that.
No, no, they covered him up well.
Yeah, we saw plenty. Like,
yeah, if that was if what we saw was after those were covered up, my God. I don't know if I'd be able to interview Janice, because my first question would be, "How dare you?" And then I would probably leave.
It'd be like me interviewing Boink last stage. I would be like, "Why?"
Yeah. First of all, how could you? Second of all.
And then
stare at him menacingly for 20 minutes.
I offered you friendship and you spat in my face.
Yep. This is why I'm not allowed. This is why I'm not allowed in the media room anymore. But last words here, Mel. Who do you see leveling up in stage two?
All right. So first, I have to talk, because all my points are taken, kind of. But first, I have to address Rian. And NYXL's been kind of resting their DPS, so I'm not sure that they ever do good after they rest on their laurels here, right? Like, we saw that in the playoffs.
If you say sandbagging, I'm going to delete the podcast.
No, they're not sandbagging. They're just resting. And San Francisco Shock, you didn't mention, has, like, the majority of the DPS on their team. So I think for them, yes, they could level up, but they could also self-destruct, because they have a lot of different players and a lot of different skilled players that want to play, and once DPS are part of the meta and they have that chance to win that spot and they don't, you're going to have a lot of really annoyed DPS players on San Francisco Shock with loud voices. And Deathblow, I get to steal your point because you didn't say Jake Rat. Jake Rat, come on! How do you miss Jake Rat? And my final answer will be Chengdu Hunters, because they've already been practicing DPS, so how could they not level up when they come into the meta?
True. That is definitely a good point. But that is going to bring us to the end of round number one. Quick recap for the audio listeners of the points. We have a two-way tie for first place. We've got Melarina and Thibble with 23 points, Deathblow with 22, and Rian rounding out the bag with 21 points. But it is early on. It's still anyone's game. Don't give up. We still have two more rounds to play, and we're going to enter round number two right now.
Round two. Capture the objective.
As was alluded to earlier, Ark was traded to the Washington Justice. A note here is that from what he tweeted out afterwards, it seems that he was not really given any notice. It just kind of happened, and he was a little bit blindsided by it. So Rian, wanted to just kind of get your thoughts on the trade itself and the kind of the way that it happened. What are your thoughts on the way it happened?
Well, if we take, you know, just history, Gamsu was traded to the Shanghai Dragons without much notice as well, it appeared. And I mean, you look at now, Shanghai Dragons, hey, those boys, they got wins. So
they made history.
Exactly. They made history.
That might be the new band phrase on the show. We talk about made history, or that getting a single win is even worth noting. That might be loss of points, but that'll be for future episodes. I'm just anyone who's doing research for the future of the show, that might be the new thing. But go on.
But on the actual trade itself, I think it's great. Ark is a great main support player, you know, and he's a great shot caller as well. You know, so many people have mentioned how great of a shot caller he is and how much that'll help teams, and especially the Justice, right? Which seems that, you know, they're a team that's it's a little bit rough around the edges, you know, to put it mildly. So I think that a shot caller who will really, you know, whip him into shape is going to be a good thing for them. But question is, will he even get to play? Because, you know, he's really good at characters like Mercy, and Mercy, you know, doesn't really see that much play. So it's a big question.
True, true. Thibble, what are your thoughts here on Ark?
I imagine Ark woke up, put on his Balenciagas or whatever, saw the tweet, said, wait, what? Ah, okay. Cool, fine. Like, in the offseason when it was rumored that he might be moving over, and then there were rumors that Washington had no money, and then he wasn't moving over, or whatever, he expressed in a tweet, I believe, that he kind of regretted not being able to go with Giannis after seeing stage one. I don't know if that regret stayed. but I imagine his ability to come in during stage two and really start to bring things back around for the Justice, who were looking pretty good against teams they have no right to look anywhere near decent with, I think there's a solid chance. So if I'm Ark, I see this as an opportunity to really bump my stock. If I come onto a team like Washington and start winning games, everyone says, oh, it's because of Ark. Oh, what a good move. What a great job. What a carry. What an amazing player. And then he makes the big bucks, as big as you can make in Washington. And, you know, he goes on to have a successful career, get traded somewhere else, or whatever the hell happens. I read a piece from BenchMob discussing players being notified of trades, and general managers were offering their comments on it and stuff like that. And it's pretty convoluted to be able to give that sort of notice to a player. Like, what if the deal falls through? What if they leak it on social media and then it falls through because of that? You know, I get it. I understand why he wouldn't be told. I wish there was kind of a leeway, like, hey, you're being traded in a week, you know, and then like it's signed and sealed, but you're being traded in a week. At least, you know, you can pack your stuff. You can say your goodbyes over a period of time, as opposed to, You got 2 hours to pack all your really expensive shoes in a really expensive bag and walk out the door. So I understand maybe the instability of a move like that, but also I understand the need for these multimillion dollar organizations to cover their ass. Sorry. So I get it. And I think it's going to work out well for everyone involved. So
definitely a lot of good points there. Mel, what are you thinking?
I mean, I feel like telling Ark that you're going to trade him is like telling somebody you're going to fire them in 2 weeks and being like, hey, still do a really good job while you're here, but I'm letting you go in 2 weeks. Like, you can't do that. And so he already knew that the trade offer and discussions were on the table in the offseason, potentially, if the rumor's true. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he thought his job was secure here in New York. If somebody else gave them a better offer, I think he was going to go. I don't know that that's best for New York. I think they'll be fine. Anima is solid. But I think the reason maybe we haven't seen Ark play on New York as much as we did last season is potentially because this trade was kind of in the works and they were just kind of waiting for them to get more money to pay for Ark, right? And what do you want to do? Like, win stage one with Ark and then trade him? Like, you don't want to do that. So you're going to build up Animo. So I don't know. I think it's good for Justice. I think the communication is the best thing for Justice. Mm-hmm. Him being there to translate and just being such like a Zen force on the team. Mm-hmm. He's like the sweetest guy in the world. I love him. And I think he can be a bigger influence than he is in New York. Mm-hmm. I think he can have that impact on the Justice that he can't have in New York.
Definitely. Deathball, last words here on Ark.
As far as how it was done, life's tough. Get a helmet. Welcome to Overwatch League. We're a professional sports league. That's how trades work. Don't take the job if you're not okay with that. As a human, it sucks, but he'll live. As far as the trade itself goes, I think it's a phenomenal trade for both sides. I think New York got to sell a player like he was a top five performer at his position. I've heard some numbers thrown around by Yiska and things like that, you know, that make me think New York got a fairly decent financial compensation in exchange for that contract. So great for them because they weren't going to need him. They could sure use maybe signing just somebody that knows how to play main support in case Animo gets sick. They did lose to London last year when Ark was sick, and that's why Animo was brought in. So maybe they repeat that and bring somebody in at a lower salary. And Ark is going to be a big influence on the Washington Justice. He gives them options. I think the Fozzix I remember from when he was the flex support is better than what we've gotten from Guido so far. So it gives them the potential to maybe make a swap there. Not that I think they will, but they certainly have that option available to them now. And poor Hyun Yu, he's probably just going to get released. But otherwise, you know, they're going to be able to communicate better now, right? Communication's been a problem for them. They did have a language barrier. They are not the Guangzhou charge. So they had to, you know, figure things out. And he's going to be able to help. We saw Bishu do something very similar last season for the Los Angeles Gladiators. So hopefully their shot calling improves, their communication improves across all aspects of their roster. And potentially they're able to upgrade at multiple positions by bringing in who I think is a top five main support. It's been a while since we've seen his Lucio. There is a question there, but his performance was great. We know his game knowledge is there. He's got experience with the main tank. He might be able to get a little more out of Janus. So maybe flex support, main support, and main tank all get better because of this one player move. Might not be a lot better, but a little bit, and that can make all the difference when you're just trying to be better than Los Angeles Valiant.
True, we finally remembered the Valiant there. Yeah, overall, I think it's it's probably good for everyone all around. And as an NYXL fan, I don't feel... I mean, Ark was a great guy, but I don't feel too bad from the positional loss there with Anemo. I'm quite... pleased with how Anemo has been playing. But moving on here, I'm going to play a quick clip from Malik's stream the other day.
You enjoying hosting Al more this season than last? I don't know. It's kind of hard to say that. Like, it's equally as good. I don't want to gauge one against the other. I will say this year's been more challenging. We just have a lot less to work with as far as, like, production. The team's a little smaller. You got a bit of a skeleton crew.
So as we heard here, Malik talking about how the production team has gotten a little bit smaller, they've got less to work with, and they're on working with a bit of a skeleton crew. This kind of perked my ears up because we just got this injection of how many expansion teams paying allegedly how much money into the league. So from the wind test would say, oh, there's a lot more money in the league. Why are we cutting things back? Thibble, what are your thoughts on this whole situation, the skeleton crew, and what's going on here?
So this is perfectly logical, right? Activision Blizzard had probably the greatest quarter in any company's history ever. Record-breaking quarter, lots of money, many numbers. The only logical move here is to cut 800 people, right? Of course, we're all agreed that that was the smart move, and therefore the Overwatch League is running on a skeleton crew and doing what it does and everything like that. I don't like this move. I haven't liked any of these moves for the past like 6 months or so. I don't want to say since Activision came on, but like we can kind of make the correlation if we want to. In general, it shows if you're paying close attention, it shows. There was a bit in the middle of a game this past weekend where they replayed like the soundbite from the GOATS clip, like in the middle of a team fight on Nepal. That was pretty bad. There was that picture on the subreddit of like one of the side screens, like blue screening, and everybody was taking pictures of that. And that's great. The desk is gone. Like Barney, I get the restructuring, the Barney music. I didn't really listen to that, but like Barney music. How do you, what? It's a literal daycare in here. I don't like this move at all. It doesn't make sense to me that this is, as said in the earnings call, a primary focus for Activision Blizzard and its shareholders over the next blah, blah amount of years. Mm. Let's gut it. Let's make it a skeleton crew. Why on earth? Why on earth is this happening the way it is? It started with the firing of Alchemister and Imagine 42 way back when. I wrote an article on that asking what's going to happen now. Who else will they cut? Will they cut the desk? They did by reinforcing Crumbs, although also high again, reinforce. Good to have you. Like, it doesn't feel right. I don't like it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely felt a little bit weird there. But Deathblow, we'll go to you here. What are your thoughts on this whole situation, the cutting of the crew and whatnot?
Well, you talked about letting Crumbs go. Talk about addition by subtraction. I honestly don't mind. I don't mind this move too much. It's fine with me. It makes sense to me, right? We're trying to fit the games in the same rough amount of time per day, right? Which is an impossible task because now we're playing four games instead of three every day. So you need less people because you need to talk less in between the games. You just need to move on and get to the next one. As far as any mistakes that happened, they did change some crew, but from my understanding of the cuts, and Thibble, I'm sure you're a little more well-versed in it than I am, the Overwatch department is not the one that was, you know, really, really gutted and really, really taken down.
To be fair.
Yeah, they were left alone by quite, you know, a lot compared to the other departments, the other games, things like that. And Blevins, you mentioned all the money the teams are bringing in, the sales of that. The league is probably at the forefront of Blizzard's mind and what they're restructuring to move resources and money into Overwatch League, if I had to guess. Again, I don't know. So there's mistakes. There's going to be any time you change producers, directors. I don't know all the different positions that were let go. I don't follow the kind of back end of the broadcast like that very much. But yeah, it just makes sense to me. I like the pace, the way things have gone. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's been some mistakes. There were some mistakes last year too. Hopefully they can get some consistency there. I'm more worried about that, right? Like, did the guys last year do such a bad job? I don't know if you listen to Reddit, it does, but I like to make a habit of never listening to Reddit under any circumstances for anything. So, let the new team get their feet wet, get their legs underneath them, get comfortable, and just get better at their jobs. I'm much better at my job now than I was, 6 months into it. So hopefully if we can get some consistency and they can keep their talent around, and maybe add some people back if they did lose some numbers. But why keep on all these contracts when the entire structure, the way the broadcast works, everything about Overwatch League is turning on its head for season 3. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is just the ability to be more agile and shift the way they need to going into next season.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Ren, what are your thoughts here on this?
I think I'm going to definitely agree with Blevins with a lot of the points that he made.
So you can definitely agree with me.
You don't make points on this show, but you'll get him for agreeing with us.
You know what?
That's now. He's just trying to get some free space.
You're just like Blevins and the things
all
that he
part
says.
Of my plan. Yeah. What do you think? I'm going to pull a Defiant earlier, huh? There we go. But I'm going to agree with Deathblow with a lot of his points. I think I do like the pacing a lot more. I think, it's a necessary evil, so to speak. You got to cut a lot of the desk and all that extra filler content. It's good, right? It's good content, but to the casual viewer, right, how much do they really care about the super minutiae? Okay, they use this ability at this time, which allowed them to make this perfect push. They just want to see some Overwatch play, right? So I like the kind of more fast-paced desk. And, Malik talked about how, they're kind of transitioning roles, that he's going from more of a stage host to kind of a desk host. So, and I think it's all about the growing period, right? In that, give everyone a couple months into it, I guarantee you, it's probably going to be a lot better than it is right now. Hopefully no more Barney music, but you never know. Anything can happen. It's Overwatch.
I missed that one. I got to figure out somebody like me.
Yeah, I need to know when that happened.
I saw that one.
I don't remember when it happened, but Mel, we'll go back to you. Last words here on the skeleton crew and the cuts for season two.
I mean, I think everybody's kind of brought up all of the major points here, but again, moving to home cities, you're not going to need as much production on site as you are other places. So maybe they were trying to cut back there. But to be honest, I think the production overall has been pretty stellar, minus a couple bleeps here and there, right? But I like the new format. I like the fact that they have the halftime show with the little weatherman screen. I think that that's cool. And I like that they're not on the desk talking for numerous minutes and we get to hear the caster's thoughts on some of the things more so than we did before. So I do really like that. I think Malik, just from his performance on the desk, could probably, gain a couple points there, because anytime it goes off script, he's just like mind blown. Right? Like, did you see him when Reinforce walked out as Gandalf or whoever he was and was like, he literally was just like, I don't know what to do with myself right now. This is not what's supposed to happen. And I can just imagine Puckett being like, yay, right? Like, and Malik's like, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing here? No.
I'm pretty sure he asked at one point if this was real. He was like, buddy, he's standing right behind
it's
you.
It's real, and it's fantastic.
Not a figment of your imagination, I promise.
We can't all react as well as Puckett does when people put mercy wings on him, or Thibble Dork just makes the broadcast as awkward as humanly possible in the most glorious way possible.
Thank you. Mispronounced awesome.
I said what I said, and I also I do love you for that, by the way.
So good. It also, I mean, for what it's worth, Puckett has been doing this for like 800 years. Ever. You can find videos of him of him in literal diapers and a baby bib casting like StarCraft II tournaments when he was an actual baby.
The dinosaurs were playing in those StarCraft tournaments. That's how long ago this was, right?
Yeah, he casted Pterodactyl versus Australopithecus. Okay,
let me tell you about that game. That was
game. I'm gonna get in trouble for saying that, but let's
dinosaurs and humans never exist.
Okay, shut up. Let's move on. Last question. Round number two. We'll talk a little bit about the home and away games that have been that have been confirmed for season three. Nate Danzer in the interview at South by Southwest did talk about that. So Mel, what are your thoughts here? How is this going to affect the league, the fans, and kind of what we're doing moving into season three?
I'm super pumped. It gives me a headache to think about the logistical nightmare that is going to come with scheduling, because I'm thinking of teams going to other countries and coming back and all of that. And I think they only announced it because they had a plan and they feel like they have it solid enough that it's going to work. But we've also seen some of their other plans maybe not work. Anybody remember stage one of season one playoffs?
Stage one of season two playoffs?
anyone remember watching the Overwatch League Combine? Remember that? Remember when that was going to be a big thing? And Miro was the invited player to the Combine? Yeah, that was great. Oh, wait.
Oh, God. Okay. But I think that the biggest thing we're going to get out of them going to their home cities is maybe we'll stop getting all these flip-floppy fans, right, that cheer for everybody because they're there and they just want to cheer for everybody, right? And that's cool, but, like, pick a team, right? Like, don't buy jerseys for seven different teams. Like, that's – I get it. Good job supporting the cause here, but like, come on, pick a team and be passionate about it. And I think we will get more of that when they go to their home cities. And that's what I'm excited about. Now, me, I live in Colorado, so I can still be flip-floppy if I want. I haven't been. I'm a Houston fan all the way. So it's very similar to being a Chiefs fan. I'm just waiting for our Patrick Mahomes to come in and just win us the whole thing. Okay.
You live in Denver. You're a Cowboys fan.
All right. Before football related fights start on the show, Deathblow, what are you thinking for season three?
I think it's great. It's going to really help the fan connection to their home markets. It's going to bring more fans into the league. I will go watch just about any sporting event live, and there are very few of them I will watch on TV. So it's going to just add exposure to the league. It's going to give Blevins and I a chance to go to some regular season games. So I'm really excited about that. We're not going to be alone in that. There's going to be a lot of people that it will unlock their ability to participate as a high-level fan. All of that's great. I'm most excited about the X's and O's of this, though. I love the home field advantage feel. I love the way that adds parity to things. Mm-hmm. You think it's not an advantage to have had to fly 12 hours to get to China, the week before. Like, there's going to be serious impact to the performance of the teams. And I don't say that in a bad way, though I think you can skew it that way if you want to. The parody we saw this stage, everybody had fun with it, and this is going to give us another element. Right now we talk about how important are the maps to this particular matchup. We talk about how many games per week are they playing. You know, if one team plays one, Blevins, me and you like to say they're in an advantage if one of their opponents plays two in a week. This is another level of that, right? So now you can get more things that stack up against a team that gives you an upset you didn't see coming. And I think all that all that stuff is great for Overwatch League. It connects you to your traditional sports fan bases that we want to reach. So I think it's only going to level up and make things even more exciting and more fun, though more exhausting for the players. Sorry, you guys are the ones that get paid. So I'm okay with that.
Definitely a lot of good points there. Rand, what are your thoughts on this road games and home and away games for season three?
I'm really interested to see how they're going to do it in the first place, right? Because you look at Europe, and they've got what, London and Paris. So are they just going to be, you know, sitting over there all by themselves, or how's that going to work, or how are they going to factor Europe and all the different regions into it and all the divisions as well? So I'm really interested to see, you know, are they just going to have, you know, a couple stadiums in each region, like, you know, one in Europe, and then, you know, sometimes teams will fly there for the London, Paris home games, or, you know, are they going to have one in China and then all the Chinese teams play in that, or a couple in, you know, the US, maybe West Coast, East Coast, you know, who knows? And I think that's definitely going to play a large factor into it, right? Deathblow just talked about it with all the home field advantage, right? I mean, I live in Washington, you talk about home field advantage, right? Whenever the Seahawks play the home games, right? It's crazy. Those guys cause earthquakes when they get really excited. So, and there's definitely something to be said about having all the fans there cheering for one team, and then the other team, just they get crickets, they get nothing. So I'm really excited for all the home and away games, and can't wait to see how they're going to actually do all that.
Let me tell you, the away teams are going to hope and pray for crickets. Yeah. They're going to wish that they were getting nothing, because it's going to be so much worse than that. Thibble, last words here on the Season 3 format.
Very interested to see how it'll go. I'll agree with Mel that there's no way they're implementing this without a plan. They've got something in mind that will hopefully handle most of the logistical nightmares. It will be a nightmare. Don't get me wrong. They will mess up. Things will go poorly or whatever. They will realize halfway through that London are going to have to play 12 hours worth of games on a single day or some terrible nonsense. What's cool with the Overwatch League and its tendency to make mistakes is that it also has a tendency to iterate on those mistakes. There are already changes coming in stage two for tiebreakers to make sure that we don't have coin flips happen again or anything like that. They're willing to work with the teams and the structures of the league to make sure that it is evolving into something worthwhile. Because if it doesn't, it dies in 3 years and then everybody loses their money and gets really upset. So yes, it will be rocky moving into 2020 and all these geolocations, but it will adjust as needed until it is comfortable, hopefully. More local fans is going to be great. It means more merch sales, more ticket sales, more live events, more giveaways, more, you know, celebrity appearances and stuff. There will also be alcohol probably, and that sounds great to me. I'm down to go to an arena and watch an Overwatch League game with a nice $20 beer in my hand. Very curious to see how that the 12th man sort of home field advantage effect works. Hopefully it'll be a little more effective than the We Are 7 thing. That wasn't so good. That
we are Owens.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
We're a seven. It was a seven.
That's a pretty key part of We Are 7. You forgot the O dash before the seven. So let's see if other teams can maybe do it right this time and actually get the We Are 7 thing going with the home field advantage. Mm-hmm. Very curious to see how teams like San Francisco or New York get rowdy when their local fan bases are doing their local fan base things. And they will also make just tons and tons of money. Hopefully this is where we really start seeing profitability on a consistent level, is when we geolocate. Obviously, it'll be expensive to house these people and these teams and these organizations in wherever they're housing them or renting space or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they'll make some money. I also do think, regarding Mel's point on the multiple team, like multiple fandom fans or everything, I think we will see a greater separation of that. I'm pretty indifferent about people, you know, rocking eight jerseys or whatever. As fans of traditional sports or anything historic, it looks weird, right, to have people, you know, wearing a Seoul jersey, then a London jersey, then a Gladiators jersey, then a whatever jersey. But to the Overwatch League, that's four sold jerseys. Mm-hmm. That's $200-something of jerseys. Woo, they love that stuff. And Blizzard Arena is such a unique space from an athletic perspective, because there's no other arena in the world where an entire league plays from it when you've got geolocated teams like this, right? Mm-hmm. This is a thing that will only happen while Blizzard Arena stands as the place of the Overwatch League, and it'll probably go away once we geolocate. So it's been interesting to watch as a content creator and a journalist. It's an amazing story to see. But I think the separation of that and actually rooting for a single team that is maybe closest to you or where you live or whatever, is probably the way things will settle. But it's been interesting to watch it so far. And damned if they aren't liking all those merch sales, because boy, howdy. Those guys have like shirts made out of the lanyards, that they like weave together and stuff. It's insane.
That is.
I see people walking around with $1,000 worth of merch on their person. That is not an exaggeration. People like the entire first row collectively probably will hold at any time between $10,000 and $20,000 worth of merch.
That is insane. All I have to say is I hope that those people are ready to have a beer spilt on them in the arena when they go to an away game, because that's going to happen.
Hydration Man is ready. Hydration Man.
Think about it, though. If they spill beer on it, right, then they have to go and buy another jersey.
It's
going to be ruined. I mean, hey, I'm just saying, hire somebody, go around spilling beer on people.
They can pay me to be drunk and spill beer.
I've already offered my services as official hot dog vendor of Overwatch League Grand Finals and BlizzCon. I'm just putting it out there.
Beer spiller to your resume
Exactly. I'll just be tossing them out.
That's a skill.
It'll be like a town crier with the bell, but like a full beer, just like splashing it everywhere. It'll be great. But before we talk more, I don't know if we'll ever talk about that again. Maybe we will. But let's do a quick recap of the points as we go into the third and final round here. We've got a very close one here. We have a clear leader a little bit, but we've got Deathblow with 53 points up at the top. Thibble, 52. Rien with 51. And Mel rounding out the pack with 50. Everyone's putting up some impressive scores. It's still anyone's game, but time is running out as we go into round number 3.
The payload is approaching its destination.
All right, so we've got our playoff teams here. We got a lot of great teams. We've got Seoul, Boston, Atlanta, Philly, San Francisco, Toronto. But the question here is, do any of those teams have even a shot against the other two remaining teams, NY or Vancouver, buy or sell?
I will buy that they have a chance. New York does not care about the stage playoffs. They've won two of them already. They're in the business of championships, not stage anything. As soon as the regular season ended, I'm betting their focus shifted completely to the new meta, as it should. Vancouver's probably a little hungry, so maybe they keep their focus a little bit more on this stage, being their debut stage, their introduction to the Overwatch League. They want to be thought of as champions. Same goes for some of the other teams down below. It's their first time here, although they threw their placement game, so who knows. And you also have, you know, the San Francisco Shock haven't been here before. So there's teams that are hungry for this, and New York is not one of them. So I actually think they are kind of beatable at the moment, just because they're not paying attention. And we saw how good they looked last season. They became very beatable when they stopped really focusing and paying attention. So, yes.
Minecraft.
Any punch trees in chat?
My money's still on New York, but yes, it's possible, very, very likely.
Definitely. Rian, what are your thoughts here? Buy or sell other teams having a chance to beat New York or Vancouver in these playoffs?
I'm gonna buy, because Vancouver, you gotta remember their history as a runaway choke champions. and NYXL, so are they, right? So both the top teams have a history of choking when it matters. So I highly expect that is going to happen. And plus, like Deathblow said, so many teams that are there for the first time that definitely want that stage playoff win. So
definitely good points.
I'm buying.
Thibble, buy or sell the beatability of NYXL and the Titans?
Oh, absolutely buy. I'm largely going to agree with the earlier points here said. I think that they're San Francisco and Toronto especially really italics want this and will fight very hard for it. I'm very curious to see how Toronto does. I underestimated them. I am not afraid to say it. I did not think they were going to do too hot. I thought that they weren't going to be able to recover their momentum after not having Neko for the first couple games or whatever. And they have obviously done that. They are looking pretty good, and I can totally see them making a deep run. Seoul are one and done. I don't think they have it. I think San Francisco are too good. I'm not super sure about Philly or Atlanta either. I will totally agree with Jane and say Philly's goats are still trash. and Seoul got their asses beat with their B team that they for some reason wanted to play. That a lot of people don't think that it's their B team, but I kind of think it is. And in general, they haven't impressed the way I thought they would with a squad like the one they've got. Yes, playoffs, but I don't think they're getting very far. I see San Francisco and Toronto really making things interesting. I see NYXL, as mentioned, focusing on other things, which may or may not involve punching trees. And I see Vancouver being way too meta-proof, way too hungry, way too strong, way too unpredictable. I've got them all the way, but other teams besides NYXL will make this very interesting.
Definitely a lot of good points there. Mel, last words here, buying or selling Vancouver and New York being beatable in these playoffs.
I can't believe I'm going to be the only person to sell, but I think Vancouver and New York have something very specific about them that makes them unbeatable against the teams they're going against. And I think that's their adaptability, right? So they're able to adapt in match, which I don't see from a lot of teams. They plan for a certain strategy and they go with it. And if it doesn't work, they try again and they continue to try. And Vancouver and New York are both able to adjust their strategy mid-game. New York specifically, right, is able to adjust at halftime or after the first match and make it a more competitive game and then end up winning. And for Vancouver, I feel like Chengdu's not in the playoffs, so they're probably not going to get thrown for, you know, a loop there. Mm-hmm. They definitely looked off their game there. So maybe somebody will bring them Chengdu Hunter-style gameplay at the same level, which I don't think is possible. But I do. I think they're unbeatable. I think that they can keep it up. And I think that New York rested on their laurels last season and saw what that came of, and they decided, hey, maybe we should win the stage playoffs this year.
I mean, I can certainly hope for that, but my thing is, I think Pine
is... They didn't get to play in New York at the grand finals because they said they don't care.
And it was a disappointment to me for sure. But my thought is that Pine is more likely to get signed by Gen G's Apex Legends team than he is to actually care about what's going on in Overwatch League right now. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited for the playoffs one way or the other. Let's move on here and talk about a team that was literally forgotten about earlier in the show, the LA Valiant. They are, in fact, 7-0-7, like we mentioned before. But, Rand, we'll start with you. Buy or sell that the LA Valiant are just out for the count here, done for the rest of the season, lock and loaded, new Shanghai confirmed.
I'm going to sell because, you know, like we saw last season with Dallas, right? They were a team very, very underwhelming. And then, you know, stage four, they really, really picked it up and they looked like a much better team. So I think, you know, Valiant, they just released, you know, one of their coaches, Coach Moon. And I'm assuming they're going to pick up another coach. I have no idea. Maybe they're just going to move Costa into that role because his brain's just so big anyways. But I think, you know, if they make some changes in coaching and how they approach the league, and especially if, you know, the meta does shift, then I think you're going to see LA Valiant actually be able to come back.
Definitely a possibility. Thibble, what are your thoughts on LA Valiant? Buy or sell them being done for?
I'm going to go ahead and sell. I think it's a little too generous to say that they're done for the season, that they'll never be able to recover from what was admittedly a ridiculous and utterly forgettable first stage. I'm very curious to see what coaching moves they make, curious to see what sort of moves in terms of the roster they make, if they trade anybody, if they just swap Custa back in, if, you know, they sign some contenders players or trade away or anything. They could do a lot of things. They have so many options. And frankly, I'm not sure what they feel they need to do to kind of recover from this. But I know that there are at least a couple checks on that list of things we should maybe consider. So curious to see how they move and what results that gives them. Mm-hmm. I think in general, there will be some teams who just aren't ready for whatever happens, whatever like meta we have to adapt to here in stage two. And I think the Valiant overall will be able to adapt to that. If their new coach realizes that that dummy thick brain will give them some real potential strategy, we could get some good stuff out of there. If Custa actually starts, we could get some really good stuff out of LA. It will be rough. It will not be instantaneous, I think. I think they still lose their next couple games here just in the transitional process. But overall, they will recover to a degree. We'll see how much.
Hmm. Mel, buying or selling the LA Valiant being donezo here?
Okay, am I buying or selling that they're donezo like 0-40 Shanghai Dragons donezo, or like not making the season playoffs donezo?
You tell us.
You pick one and run with it.
Okay. I'm going to buy that they are not making the season playoffs donezo, right? I think that they will make changes. I think they will get better, and I think they will win games here and there, but I don't think they will be able to make up for the deficit of the 0-7 stage one. I think they might come into stage two a little rejuvenated with maybe a different head coach and maybe a different meta and kind of poke into that. But I think their spirits are a little broken right now, right? Like, they're the home team, and like the Valiant fans are just crying at the end of every game. And I don't know. They've made games competitive. I will give them that. That they have made games more competitive. It wasn't like a Shanghai loss every time. You know, Shanghai, it was like, yeah, you're going to 4-0. Yeah, good game. But Valiant is 3-2 to a lot of, or 2-3, I guess, a lot of teams. And I think that that says a lot for them. But I still don't know that they can pull it together. So
definitely, man, it's tough for them. But Deathblow, last words, buy or sell, LA Valiant.
I'm more on the side of Mel here. You know, the Valiant just aren't a very good team this stage, and that's probably not going to stay the same way, but I'm going to go ahead and buy a fork and stick it right in the LA Valiant because I think they are done as far as this season is concerned. 25% of this season has gone, and they have yet to win a game. That means in order to get to 500 and maybe be a part of the play-in top 12 wild card weekend, whatever we're going to be calling it when we get to the end of stage four, they need to win 2/3 of their games. So that now they need to win 14 times and lose only 7 times in order to get back to that 500 record to maybe have a chance. So do I think they're going to stay an 0-7 team throughout every stage? You know, no. Do I think they're going to rebound and become a little bit better? Yes, but this season has gotten away from them. It's over. They may have waited too long to make their coaching change and basically ended their season. I don't see how they even get back into that playoff wild card scenario. So I think they're done. If we shift to a meta where their DPS have to be the stars, I'm not sure Agilities and Kareev are the two to get them there.
Yeah, man, I honestly don't know where I have them, except that I know just instinctively the LA Valiant always need to go smack dab in the middle at any given point. So they'll probably have a perfect stage next stage and be exactly balanced, just as it should be. LA Valiant is literally Thanos, except they Thanos themselves sometimes too. But yeah, they Thanos'd out all of their wins in stage one. But let's move on here to the very last question of round number three. This, of course, is going to be the meme question because we saw what can only be described as live memery happening in real time at the end of the stage when we're deciding the playoffs, because our good friend right here, Mr. Coin, made his shining debut in Overwatch League and decided actual semi-relevant things in Overwatch League for stage playoffs in terms of who's playing who in these stage playoffs because of a one-level tie between the Toronto Defiant and Philadelphia Fusion, who decided mutually to flip a coin. So, Thibble, we'll start with you. Buy or sell just the whole usage of the coin and having it even happen at all in Overwatch League?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, do I have a deal for you. For only 25 cents, you could pay for old man Nanzer to flip a coin and get the result wrong live on camera in front of a like graffiti wall or wherever the heck he was standing. I don't know any deal on Instagram, live on Instagram. I don't know a better deal you could ever find in the history of the world than an old man getting a coin flip wrong live on camera. The coin flip is the greatest thing to ever happen to the Overwatch League, and it's the greatest thing that ever will happen to the Overwatch League. I definitely don't think it's a breach of competitive integrity. I definitely don't think it's two teams saying, I don't want to play. Do you want to play? We could be in the hot tub right now. That sounds good. Let's flip a coin. No, I don't think it's any of that. I think it is the greatest possible thing that they have ever thought of, ever. I love it so much. Buy the coin flip, everybody.
Ooh, I like the panache. Mel, are you as exuberant in buying the coin flip here?
I mean, heck yeah, you either have a coin flip or rock, paper, scissors it, right? Like, come on, somebody get out there and do something. I mean, they tied in the season, right? Like, you tied. It's up to chance now. Like, it doesn't matter. You can play another game. Yeah, that's great. But do you really want to play another game? Do you want to, like, one, show a team that you may be playing later more strategy that you've been preparing? Two, that's just an extra game you have to play when you could be preparing. Right. So now are you going to prepare for an extra tiebreaker game instead of prepare for the actual game that you're going to play? I get it. I get why the other teams didn't do the coin flip and they took the tiebreaker match because nobody wanted to play NYXL. The other one was kind of like, it's fine. I'll play, you know, whoever. It doesn't matter. But I love it. I think it was great. I think the fact that it got wrong and then corrected and like, that's amazing.
Yeah, the flub of the coin was definitely, I think, the best part. Deathblow, buying or selling the coin flip?
I can't even put the sarcasm on and pretend like Thibble did to be happy about it. I'm selling the stupid coin. I don't want it.
You literally flip a coin every week on your podcast.
I know, and we get it right every single time, Mal. Every time we get the result right. I've never once in my life flipped a coin and gotten it wrong. I've never taken that wrong result and posted it on the website. And maybe I'm a little madder about this because we were literally commenting on the match that was incorrectly posted up on their website for a while while we were recording our episode yesterday.
You do realize that happens every week. Every week they have, in map two, they have the winner of that map posted on their website. Of that, like, match posted on their website. Every week I look at it and I'm like, that's not right.
I don't know what Mel's talking about, but this is my section, so I'm running over and I'm taking over. I want nothing to do with this coin. Listen, if you want to put it in the rule books that you decide the stupid positionals, you know, seating-based tiebreakers by a coin flip, I'm all for that. But where is the rule book? I don't know. We don't really have one. We have a summary that's placed up on the website that people on Twitter think is the comprehensive rule book and bother me for 3 days about. So give me the rule book and tell me where it shows that the teams are allowed to mutually agree on a coin flip there. I just want to know, did nobody think this would happen? Didn't this? How close was this to happening how many times last season? During the stage playoffs, wasn't there ties? Didn't we just lower the number of games and increase the number of teams? I'm not even a math major, and I know ties became a whole lot more likely when we went to 8 people in the stage finals with only 7 games in a stage. This is the first time I think the Overwatch League has just kind of looked stupid and like they don't know what they're doing. So I'm willing to look past it for the most part, but it was a bad look this weekend. Nobody wanted it to go down that way. Thibble, you talked about iterating on mistakes. This is a big one. I'm glad they're making changes. I'm glad they're doing things. But we as fans can be armed with information. Give us whatever the rule book is. Or just bother to write one finally, because I no longer think one actually exists out there. Why don't we have it?
I like a lot of the points you made. I don't think you said buy or sell.
I did. I said selling this stupid coin and I threw it across my apartment.
All right. I'll have to check the replay. I'll have to check the replay, but we'll take your word for it. Riyadh, last words here. Buying or selling the coin flip?
Well, you're gonna have to give me a moment, because in the spirit of the coin flip, let me go get one.
Oh, is he gonna? I see what he's doing.
Resident sleepers in the chat.
Heads for buy. Tails for sale. Let's see. What are we going to get? I'll catch it. I promise. Boom. Caught it. Look at that.
I've never flip once it. Caught a
heads,
coin on camera.
Buy. Coin? Coin flip? This is the greatest invention ever created.
Hire him to be your coin flip.
Listen. When have we ever seen something so balanced. It is perfect 50-50. You will never get a result in a coin flip that is not perfectly split 50% winning, 50% losing. That is it. That is perfect. You're winning 50% of your games. You're losing 50% of your games. It's all up to chance. You don't got to play. You don't got to sit around, play goats all day, get shield bashed by Brigitte, give yourself a concussion. All you got to do is let old man Nathan answer. Flip the coin, catch it, and then give the answer wrong. You never know. He might get better by the end of it, okay? The coin flip meta is the best meta to ever exist in the history of mankind.
It sounds like you're trying to, like, get hired by the Houston Outlaws. Just like 50-50?
Hey!
Please hire me.
Win half of our games, lose half of our games.
I reject it out of hand.
I will say that Nate Answer did say he will never do the coin flip again.
Absolutely.
Which is great. Which I want to.
Not a thing that should have happened.
I hope,
and
it's
that's
Nate.
At least
Nate,
a small part.
I'm pretty sure because he's messed it up, right? He's like, I don't want to do that ever again.
Hire me, Nate. Come on.
First good decision that the Overwatch League made all weekend.
It's just like Steve Harvey, like, just saying the wrong thing. It's just like, oh, it was heads. No,
guys, tail. Moonlight won Best Picture. It was Moonlight. So sorry.
It was Tails that won Best Picture. But
guys, they do a coin flip at the beginning of every NFL game.
That's
a wee bit different, I would say.
No, it's the same thing.
The winner of the coin flip doesn't win the game, Mel.
Yeah, that's why.
All right, enough about the coin. We are at the end of the round. We're at the end of the round, and it is the sad part of the show where I have to eliminate two guests off as we go into the finals. We had a final score here. We had two front runners here of Deathblow and Thibbledork with 79 points a pop, and Mel and Rian both had 75 points. So unfortunately, Mel and Rian, you are no longer in the running for the final win here, but you do get to help decide the winner, because this final question is not going to necessarily be determined by me. We're going to ask this final question. Both Thibble and Deathblow are going to be able to give their response, and then Rian and Mel are going to vote for who they think gave the better response, and in the case of a tie, comes back to old Papa Blevs, who may just flip a coin. Might just flip a coin to see who wins.
Rian, let's do it.
But
can me and Thibble mutually agree to just go directly to the coin toss?
Yeah, you know what? You can't. No, you can't. You absolutely can't. Sell.
By the way, Rian, I picked the...
I'll check the rule book.
You know what? I'll release the comprehensive rules for Around the Payload on Twitter after the show. But sure, let's get into the final question. I'll release just a summary of the rules.
How do I actually get points?
I'll do an actual summary of the rules right now. Not rigged. Let's go into the final question. And in the spirit of the coin flip, because you know what? I'm going to be perfectly transparent here. I hate the coin flip. I think it's dumb. It's terrible. We need just another level of tiebreaker. Just have a second tiebreaker. It's very easy. And here is what it is. Deathblow and Thibble, you are going to decide what is the most elaborate, extraneous, superfluous, or whatever method to determine the final level of ties. It can be, you know, maybe it's map wins, maybe it's amount of distance traveled on Numbani. That's the second tiebreaker, the third tiebreaker. I want to know what the absolute last can't possibly tie tiebreaker is. Thibble, we'll start with you.
Can I actually defer and go second? Do I have that option? Ooh.
No.
Okay.
We didn't mutually agree on it, so we can't just flip a coin.
Flip a coin. Let's go down, kid.
That's a freaking coin away. No more coins. Okay, here's all right. Two teams. They're tied. Their head-to-heads are the same or whatever. Their map differentials are the same. You can't tell them apart. You know, and whatever. Okay? Send me your strongest player. Bring him to the Blizzard Arena. Bring him to the general admission front row. Right? Strip down. Oil up. Let's get in the ring.
I'm talking bare knuckle wrestling. Who wins? Winner takes all, and then I decide who wins.
Alive.
I break the tie. It's me.
Seagull Man. But my question is, why were they stripping down and oiling up for boxing? What boxing are you watching?
You got to be all like Adonis, like Greek, like old Olympic style. Yeah.
Okay.
That mental image.
All right. Deathload, what is your tiebreaker?
I've never argued with a bird before, but here we go. Thibble, the meme question was last round, my friend, last round. The tiebreaker here for me is divisional match wins. Okay, so how many wins did you get within your division? I think we need divisions to matter more in Overwatch League. I would also probably throw just map wins overall in there as well. I think the two of those should really eliminate the need for any ties. Move or something, Thibble. It's so creepy when you just sit there and don't move. I can't. It's just like, fine, turn your head. That's also creepy, but like way more manageable on my end. But
intimidation.
Yeah, I didn't even see him grab it. He's playing on levels I don't know that I can hang with right now. But yeah, I think divisional match wins is the way to go. Divisions, like I said, need to matter more. I think this is a great way to bring them into play, make those matches that much more important. You might need to tweak the schedule a little bit to balance out how many each play within their division every stage or something like that. Keep it even. But, yeah, that's what I'd go with.
All right. So we have the...
Make him take it off.
No, absolutely not. I will never do that. We have the reasonable answer in division wins, and we have the even more reasonable answer, potentially, of just, for some reason, naked and oiled up Greco-Roman style wrestling. Ballerina, who are you voting for?
Oh, man. I gotta go with Deathblow, because I do agree that I think divisions need to be better, and it can't vote for a bird. It just can't do it. It goes against everything.
All right.
What is the bird phobia? Avian phobia? What is that?
Have you ever seen birds?
Ornithoptophobia? Ornithophobia? I don't know.
It's xenophobic, Thibble. Come on now.
Rian, who are you voting for here?
I got one vote for you.
The Cheebus.
I don't know
what that means.
I have no idea what that is.
I'm voting for Thibble. Come on. You're telling me you don't want to see. Listen, Bumper and A-Mang oiled up head to head in the arena. And you got this crazy seagull presiding over it. It's a cage match. And he's perched up on the top. He's perched up on the top looking down at them, throwing birdseed at them. Who knows? So anything can happen. You know, it's Thibble Dork's WWE cage match. That's what I want to see. That's peak content.
Counterpoint, Pine and Aid in a ring, lathered in oil.
Well, you know, I
think Pine and Fraggy.
Oh, see, look how many good matchups there are.
I mostly brought this up because Fraggy exists.
All right.
Look how many good matchups there are. This is come on.
I like how he sounds like a robot in the mask.
Here's how it's breaking down. Because it is a tie here. That means I have to weigh in. Here's how it's breaking down. Deathblow, amazingly relevant and perfectly legitimate point. That's how it actually should be written in the rule book. I want the 15th tiebreaker that can't possibly be made in a tie. It's going to Dibbledork. I want to see... you know what? I was on the fence until you reminded me that we could see Pine and Aid lathered up and wrestling in the arena.
Scientists
say this is the last thing you see before you die.
Yes, of just pure joy and ecstasy. So that is going to be it. Thibbledork, you are the victor here. You have captured the objective. You get the floor is yours. Shout out, sell out, whatever you have. Go ahead.
God, I've got so many things. I'm a writer for the Game House. I also do a talk show of my own called Watch House, which is not nearly as memey as this. maybe it'll kind of start shifting. I don't know. This has been an experience in and of itself. I run a little Twitter account called Contenders_OW, where I constantly promote all seven regions of Contenders 7 days a week at ridiculous hours. Seriously, I need some sleep. I also do community management and social media management for Triumph and Open Division's team. We just announced our new roster for this season of North American Open Division, and it looks nutty and stacked and crazy. D-Cod is there. He's not wearing a shirt. He's got a big hammer.
I'm Whoa!
You can,
is he wrestling?
Not yet. That's the first stage.
Will he play?
But he is oiled up.
League.
I'm going to try and get him to play oiled up. We'll see. It depends on if he has garbage bags for his chair. It's a mess. It's a whole logistical thing. I'll get it figured out for you. In general, I do casting and analysis work with Broadcast GG alongside Rian, who I'm sure will bring that up in his little segment if he gets one, even though he lost. In general, I post a lot of weird stuff on Twitter all the time. I am constantly doing articles, interviews, features, breakdowns, educating people on how the players think, how Contenders works, the regions, the teams that are good or bad, or my thoughts on the Overwatch League and its metas and all the weird, crazy stuff that goes on that you guys want to know about. I am constantly looking for suggestions. My Twitter is @Thibbledork. I have a personal Discord that I don't use very much. I'll post it on Twitter after this if you guys want to go check it out and all that stuff. In general, I think I'm a nice, cool, handsome guy as well. So, you know, there's that. And thanks very much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you for being here. You are the first person that sold out so much that I thought this was a dating profile. So if you are, this is we might be getting you Tinder swipes from this episode. Ooh. Who knows?
Kevin swiped right, apparently.
I mean, what? No. That is going to be it. You're going to see all of the awesome social media content on the links down below in the description and whatnot. But thank you to everyone for Melarena, for Thibbledork, for Rian, for Deathblow. I am the Blevins, and we'll catch you guys next time around the payload. Bye-bye.
See you guys.